Before we introduce Rabbi Navon, I would like to just explain a little bit of the issues. You know, there's a famous ethical problem. I think in the 1960s, a philosopher went around the world and asked the following question. He said, imagine you see a trolley car, a train, that's going down the tracks, and somehow five people, it sees 100 feet in front of it, five people sitting there. I don't know how they got there. Maybe they were tied up, enough gamina. And the train cannot stop in time or will kill all five people. At the same time, there is a track on the side which is unused and it wasn't supposed to be used. And you, the third party watching, could press a button, divert a switch, divert that train onto the side and save the five people. However, there's one problem. There's one person sitting on the track over there who you will then kill. Do you save the five people or do you save the one person? Right? Chavinish, by the way, was asked this question, similarly in the case of a missile. A missile going towards a town can kill many brachmanos on many people in the town, divert it and kill one person. So many people say, not all, but many of the people in this audience said that they would divert the train and kill the one person. The lives of one or the lives of many, you would choose the lives of one. We're going to talk about the Yerushalmi and Trumas, that's a Mishnah, but this is the question, right? And he then followed up with a question. Well, you said save the lives of the five. Well, what would be the case if you're the bystander with me? You're the one with the switch. But you see that there's no track on the side, but there's a bridge, a walking bridge, that goes over these tracks. And you see the train hurtling at the five people. And up on top of the walking path, you happen to be up there watching, there's a really fat fellow. He's 450 pounds, 500 pounds. This guy is Yapchik, three times a day, 350 days a year. He's standing there on top. And you know, with a little push, you could send him hurtling off the path. He would land in front of the train, stop the train cold, and you would save the five people's lives. Would you push this guy off to save the five people or not? Now think about that. Now, what's interesting is many people in the crowd who said they would stop the train, would and divert it, and kill the one, would not push this person off, and nobody could articulate what the difference is until the great Chavinish. And it's interesting, the Chavinish discusses this problem decades before this English philosopher brought this, called the trolley problem, to the public's attention. And the Chavinish has an astonishing thought. He says, this is a klal in Kol HaTorah, that you cannot, you know, if they surround the city, you can't give one out. He says, that's because you're doing a mitzvah of killing. You're doing an act of cruelty, throwing somebody to the lions. We don't throw somebody to the lions. But he said, if you're doing an act of hatzalah, an act, a hero act of saving, such as diverting something, that's not an act of achzarius, that's not an act of killing. You're doing an act of saving. Collateral damage to your saving, incidentally, somebody will die. He said that, he says the Bederach Efsher, he says the Tazman, would be very likely mutter. So diverting the trolley, doesn't speak about the trolley, according to the Chavinish, would likely be mutter. Pushing somebody off a bridge is an act of achzarius. It's not an act of achzalah. It's an act of achzarius that collateral to it is a achzalah. Right? Whereas the other case is letting somebody out of the city, it's an act of achzarius collateral to that of hatzalah. Which is the dominant, what defines the action? So that is really, and now with these cars, we're going to speak to the engineer, who years before accidents happen, he's deciding, how do we turn that vehicle? Who will die? Who will live? We're speaking to somebody who truly almost acts like a god in deciding who will die and who will live in vehicles. He is writing the software for practically every car that will be on this planet in 15 or 20 years. It's starting already now. Teslas are self-driving. Let's go for a fascinating interview with Rabbi Moshe Navon.
We have the honor of having with us on the phone from Efrat, Israel, Rabbi Moshe Navon, who is the design manager for Mobileye. Mobileye is the largest software company in the world that designs and powers autonomous self-driving vehicles, designs the programs. I'm not an expert. I don't know the exact language. But he designed the brain that will allow self-driving vehicles to give them their instructions. Welcome, Rabbi Navon.
Thank you very much. If you'll permit me, I'll just make a slight corrections about what exactly Mobileye does. We're not really a software company. We make algorithms, which are the way that computers think about things, and we put that in software, and then all of that runs on very sophisticated hardware. And so it's really the whole combination of hardware, software, and algorithms that makes Mobileye the company that it is.
Can I understand that Mobileye, it was the largest purchase of an Israeli company ever for over $15 billion by Intel, which very much wanted to get into the business of hardware and software for automated vehicles. Is that correct?
Correct. I mean, Intel bought Mobileye for $15.3 billion, which, yes, as you stated, is the largest purchase of any company in Israeli history. And it really says a lot about Israeli innovation, Israeli technology. Intel is the largest chip maker in the world, and they came to buy a chip from us. And yeah. There's another sort of paradigm shift beside the fact that they paid a lot of money, and that is that they didn't just buy the company and then, you know, change the name to Intel and come and see who's there and swap them out with Intel employees or Intel computers or anything like that. In fact, they bought us to take over them. They have an ADG or Automotive Development Group where they've been working on this issue of trying to make cars safe to the point of having autonomous vehicles. And they decided that they would be best suited to have Mobileye not only as a part of that, but Mobileye take over their ADG. Their Autonomous Development their Automotive Development Group is coming under Mobileye. And so it's changing the way people think about Israel, right? The way people think about Israeli technology and just the innovation that's available here is pretty astounding.
Rabbi Navon, I want to talk to you about the halachic and moral issues, being that you're both a rabbi as well as a software and hardware engineer, about the ethical and halachic challenges. So let me start the ball rolling and then you take it where you would like to go with it.
Okay, fine.
You're the programmer of a autonomous vehicle, and you're programming the vehicle. Now, here's a live situation that would happen. The vehicle has five passengers in it. It's on a highway, and suddenly the eye of the vehicle, this electronic eye, detects a truck coming in the opposite direction that loses control and lurches straight towards the vehicle that has the five passengers who are sitting reading the paper because it's driven autonomously,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to kill all, the eye can detect it will kill all five passengers in your vehicle. Your vehicle only has one option, to turn into another lane and to kill a motorcyclist who's traveling happily on his way to work, who would otherwise be safe, uninjured. Basically, do you elect to kill the motorcycle driver, or do you say, Cheval Tas Adif, and elect to have your five passengers killed? That is both an ethical and a halachic shaila. You as a designer, how do you approach that from a halachic point of view?
Okay, so it's a good question. I mean, you know, these moral dilemmas have been around for a long time. The one that you've just elaborated on is a sort of a twist on the classical trolley problem, where there's somebody looking at a trolley going down the lane, and there's five people on one side and one person on the other, and the trolley's going to hit the five, and the third party can switch the lane to the one. You've made it a little bit more complicated in terms of who's doing what. But nevertheless, it's sort of the same dilemma, and the dilemma is sacrificing the few to save the many. Rav Bleich recently wrote an article in Tradition about it, you know, under different circumstances. There's other variations of it. I mean, there's what they call the tunnel problem, where you have, it would be me and my autonomous vehicle coming down the road, and somebody else is in the way, and so do I run him over and save myself, or do I have the car run off the road or into the mountain, whatever it is.
So, Rabbi Navon, let's go through them one by one, because
okay.
You've worked on this for a long period of time, our audience hasn't. Let's go one-on-one. The autonomous vehicle has a choice. There's one person in it.
One person.
The truck coming towards, yes. Let's start with one and move through it. One person in the vehicle. A truck is coming at it. You could direct the vehicle into another lane, kill a motorcyclist or cyclist, and save your passenger. What do you direct your vehicle to do?
Right. Okay. So, like you said, I mean, I think that we should maybe start from the beginning, which we started now a little bit more complicated with, you know, many against one, and now we went to one and one. Really, we need to take just one more step back and just ask, you know, how have ethicists in general dealt with this? And there's a distinction between two ways you can approach an ethical problem like the ones that we're discussing. One is they use this really big word called deontological. Deontological, basically, it means there's people who say, I have a principle. Like, Ein nefesh mitnei nefesh. Right? You don't judge between one person and another, or ein hordin b'yadayim. You don't go and kill somebody for whatever reasons it is. You're not allowed to kill somebody. So these are principles. And so we would try to take all of these cases and we'll apply these specific principles to try to come to a decision. Now, there's another group, and that group, they're called the consequentialists or the utilitarians. They basically look at the consequences, at the utility, at the final result. I have a case now of five people versus one person. What's the best outcome to save the five? I don't care if you have to run over the one who was merrily on his way, not involved. I just look at the consequences of the whole picture. And so I don't really have this specific principle of ein hordin b'yadayim, you know, we don't kill somebody actively for no reason outside of the Beit Din or whatever it is. And so these two groups, whether they're, you know, Jewish or not Jewish, religious or not religious, they sort of define all kinds of people how to approach these problems. Now, as a rav, as a person who lives by halakha, so we try to use certain principles. And so, like for the yachid mul yachid, for the individual where there's we have to make a decision between two people. So, you know, we have this primary principle which Rava states in the Gemara in Pesachim that says, "My chazi d'dama didach sumaytzei." That, you know, how do you see your blood redder? Of course, your blood isn't redder. You cannot judge between one person and another, and therefore, just based on that statement, if I can't judge between two people, I have no right to take the life of the other person. If I'm going on a tunnel, if I'm on a straight road, mountain road, where it's either go off the cliff or drive over the guy that's in front of me, so from this single principle of Rabbi, I would have to kill myself and not kill the other person. It would be a Yareg Val Yavor.
And this everybody would agree to, right? That it's one and one. A person could either go off a cliff or kill an innocent person. That the concept is, my cause is, why is my blood redder than his? And therefore, the person would have to go, would everybody agree to that? And halakha, halakhically, would everybody agree with that?
Well, with certain provisos. See, and that's where, you know, things start to get complicated. I mean, as an explicit principle in the Gemara of my chazit, everybody agrees to that principle. But nevertheless, there's all kinds of factors that complicate the final decision. So everybody agrees to the idea that I cannot judge another person. You know, I don't know where they're at. They don't know where I'm at. And so, in a certain sense, we're all equal. But then things start to change. So you have, for example, the Sofer and Sanhedrin. They said, and it's on the same. It's the same statement of Rava that basically, if somebody said go and kill somebody else, or I'm going to kill you, so you have to give up your life. But if somebody said, go, let me throw your body on a little baby, and you will crush the baby, and it will die. So the Tosfot said, you're not actively killing. You're not. This is Eino Harigabi Yadayim. And so you are allowed to allow yourself to be thrown on this baby. So basically what he's saying is that you're not allowed to actively kill, but you are allowed to passively kill. And so now you have a different situation. If you're driving on the road and you're just driving straight and presumably, like, let's say that you're in an autonomous vehicle or you're in, you know, even cruise control, so you're not really doing anything. You're just driving straight. So this would be considered passive, according to some at least. And if the road was curved, so now you're actively turning the steering wheel if you're not in an autonomous vehicle, but you actually have to do something to follow the lane, and now the guy is around the turn, so now you're actively killing him, and even Tosfot would say that you're not allowed to run him over, you have to run off the cliff.
But you're saying in a case where if you just went straight, it would kill the other person, and there was this, If the road was curving, and if you went straight, you killed the other person, Bishav Al-Tasa. But
if the road was if the road was not curved, it would be considered Shev Al-Tasa.
Right.
According to
Code 4. Now, here's the question. So you could, figure out a case where it's Bishav Al-Tasa, so maybe let the vehicle kill the other person to save yourself, Bishav Al-Tasa. That's what you're suggesting, my choice. But my comeback to you would be, is when you're programming the vehicle, so it's constantly being programmed, so it's being programmed to go straight. So the program is not Bishav Al-Tasa. The programmer is the Kumbase. He's programming the vehicle.
Okay, so now if we get into the programming, it starts to get a little bit more complicated, and it's not exactly like you're putting it, because if the program just says go 50 miles an hour and follow the lane markers, it's not actually doing anything new. It's not actually making a new decision. You follow? So there's
it's
room to
making,
say that it was different.
But you're making.
Who's making the decision?
The programmer is commanding it when it sees this in this situation, how to react. So if this is the Kumbase, it's being given instruction 10 years in advance as to how to deal with the situation. So wouldn't that arguably be not Shev Al-Tasa, but Kumbase? You're telling it to continue despite it's going to kill somebody because it's straight ahead. So that computer program is being written years in advance. Isn't the program in
right?
Effect?
So, okay, so there's. I think I personally think that there's two different ways to look at it. I mean, I think that there is room to say that there would be a piece of code that said drive 50 unless, and so. It never gets to that unless, and so it just is driving 50, and so there isn't really a Kumbase. On the other hand, you could look at it the way you're saying it, and saying that when the programmer sits down to write his code, so any decision that's being made is a Kumbase. Because it's the decisions
right.
that's being made. And so the decision, even the decision to continue driving is a Kumbase. And so there is room to say that no matter what you do in a program vehicle as opposed to a person driving, we could make a distinction and say a person could get into a case of Shev Al-Tasa, but a computer program would never get there and would always be Kumbase because it's always being written in advance to do something.
Question.
Right.
So let's draw up just for our audience. So on a one-on-one, barring these very lumbish, incredibly thoughtful, iterative things that would change it, but if it's a straight one-on-one, we could say, my cause is a dumb deduct so much say, and you would have to go walk the cliff, right? Absent the places. Now let's go to the next case where it's a little more complex, the trolley case, where there are four or five people in the car, and the truck will wipe out everybody in the car unless it veers off the highway or into the next lane and kills a single individual. How do you, as a rabbi, as well as a software engineer, what's your take on it?
So, I mean, as a rabbi, so we go to the sources, right? There's the Yerushalmi and Trumot that talks about a group of goyim that comes to a city of Jews and says, give us somebody or we kill everybody. Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan have a machloket about it. At the end of the day, the Rambam Paskins, like Reish Lakish, that says that unless they said, give us Reuven, and Reuven happens to be Chayav Mita, that he has the death penalty hanging over him. In any case, the whole city has to die. This is like the classic source that says you cannot save the many by sacrificing the few. But nevertheless, there's a famous Chazon Ish on the Gemara in Sanhedrin where he talks pretty much about our trolley case of the few and the many, where he discusses an arrow or a missile going toward a large group of people, and somehow you have the power to sway the arrow or missile to go and hit only one person. And can you save the many by moving this arrow, or in our case, this autonomous vehicle, to the few or to the single individual? And
which, by the way, Rabbi Navon, which in Israel, sadly, is very common. If one also, they send a Scud missile at Tel Aviv.
Right.
To kill many people. And then they shoot a Patriot missile to knock it down. And the guy who's shooting the Patriots, is going to fall on a house and kill an innocent person in a house who was never part of this entire was never threatened in the first place.
What halacha
could he send a patriot up, or does he have to allow the scud to land in Tel Aviv? This is the exact case of the Chazei Nish. You see it, unfortunately, very real time in Israel.
Correct. I mean, the only thing is that it's slightly different with shooting the parachute because, A, they're basically trying to take out the missile completely, and if there is some kind of fallout, it's completely unknown. Here we're actually being very specific and saying, I am going to kill this other person. The Chazon Ish in this, the Chazon Ish has a bit of a difficulty about what should be done. I mean, in terms of the specific case that you're talking about, it would seem that Rav Asher Weiss talks about it and would allow the patriot to hit, especially if you didn't know. If you knew that you were going to kill somebody else, then it becomes more complicated. But if you're just like deflecting something to save the many, and then there's some other fallout, I would definitely not call that harigabi yadayim. You know, but here we're talking about Hari Gabal Yadayim. Here we're talking about we're going to move the car, we're going to move the missile, and we know it's going to hit Reuven. And so what the Chazon Ish says is that perhaps moving the arrow is different than handing over the Jew in the city that's become surrounded by goyim. He says that moving the arrow is really a pu'ulat hatzalah, as opposed to a pu'ulat achzarit, he calls it. So it's instead of it being a, you know, handing over somebody, which is a brutal act, here the moving of the arrow is really in large and in principle an act of saving. Nevertheless, even though he says that he's not sure, because really at the end of the day you are killing somebody, and so everybody agrees that you can't kill somebody with your own hands, as it were. That's the terminology. So the Chazon Ish gives us a little bit something to go on, but he doesn't give us a definitive answer.
So the Yerushalmi and Trumas brings the Brisa. It says that basically you're not at La Locha. They surround the city. They say, give us one person or we'll kill everybody. You're not allowed to give one person out. But so Shiloh, whether they name the person, if he's hiding me, so not hiding me, but that's how the Rambam paskin, offering both days. So he says, we don't, for halacha, believe that you can save an entire city by giving one innocent person out. But you cannot save the many by sacrificing the one. So in the case of the car, therefore, you would not be able to save the five passengers to kill the one person. However, you mentioned the Chazon Ish, which I believe is in Sanhedrin, Simon Chafei, for anybody interested. And the Chazon Ish says it's chilish. Over there, by giving out a person, you're doing an act of maisa of hariga, ritzichi, giving, you're throwing into the lion. Whereas when you're deflecting a missile, you're doing an act of saving, an act of hatzalah. Due to the act of hatzalah, somebody else, there will be collateral damage and somebody will be killed. But the act that you're doing is an act of hatzalah. So are you so mad on this? Do you rely on this Chazon Ish when you design a program? Because I believe the Chazon Ish is Masupik, and the Chazon Ish says it's the Derech Efsha, and he's uncertain.
Correct. That's absolutely true. And in case you may already be aware of it, like the Sikh Eliezer Hoskins against and says explicitly that one cannot save the many by sacrificing the few. And the Sikh Eliezer brings the case of the car itself. If you ask about programming, so I think that we should also be clear about a few things from the high-tech world. Number one is that we are basically trying to reduce traffic accidents. We are basically trying to make the roads safer. The goal is to make the roads safer. A few years ago, the World Health Organization published a number of 3,300 people are killed or die in car accidents every day. Every day. So we're trying to basically reduce that number to, I would say, you know, zero, or it's not going to be zero, but it's going to be very far from 3,300 a day. Now, another piece of information you have to understand is that we are trying to make the cars drive and integrate as smoothly and seamlessly as possible, and so we're very much concentrating on how to get cars to drive seamlessly together. We believe that the cases that we are talking about, while incredibly interesting and have been around, as we said at the beginning of this conversation, for a long time with names like the tunnel problem, the trolley problem, we believe that these are going to be incredibly, incredibly rare. The more and more that autonomous vehicles are on the road, the farther and farther apart any kind of situations like this are going to arise. Because all these cars are talking to each other. They're completely connected by not just the camera system that Mobileye is expertise at, but there will be LIDAR, radar, vehicle-to-vehicle talking, GPS. There's going to be a whole range of technology that's surrounding each and every individual car. So in reality, we don't believe that this is really going to happen. There are other bigger problems that the cars are going to need to deal with as opposed to the trolley problem. Nevertheless, it is something that needs to be dealt with. And from what I've understood from the people that are working directly on these algorithms is that these kinds of things, these safety issues are going to be defined by governments. They're going to be defined by regulators who are going to say, in our country, the way that a car should react to the trolley problem is X. You know, we believe in utilitarianism. We believe in deontology. We believe in this rule or that rule. And Mobileye or any other car manufacturer that's designing the code for this is going to be beholden to those people who are really responsible for setting the law down. So as an engineer, as programmers within a company that's working on these things, we are working to make cars as safe as possible, to make the roads as safe as possible, but we are not actually coding a trolley problem at this day.
But let's say that the government told you to code it. So whoever's
right.
doing it, whichever Jewish person in Israel is doing it, could be a rotsayach, according to the Chazedish of the stuff. According to the other side of the Chazedish, this person could go to sleep at night and say, well, the Chazedish said it's a topic, it's 50-50, maybe today I killed a person. How would you respond to that if I asked you?
So I would say...
It's good that you're making the world a better place, but still, we have to go with halacha. How would you respond?
Absolutely. I agree 100%. I agree 100%.
Put on your rabbi cap.
Yes, absolutely. I wear my rabbi cap every day, 24/7. I believe in halacha. I believe in living by halacha. And I think that the question that you're asking now is could really be asked for any profession where the boss asks you to do something against halacha. It's going to be a very difficult position for the individual that he may have to get up and walk, right? I mean, if you really are being put in a position that you believe you're going to violate halacha, you can't steal, you can't kill, you can't, those are the extreme examples, of course, but there are, people face these kind of questions every day, and hopefully not so much, but, there are times when somebody has to put their priorities and take a difficult decision in Parnassa. At this point, we haven't been put in that position. I would say that I think that there will be a consensus, and as we're seeing through the sources, we didn't get to touch on all of them, but there are positions going in many different directions, and I would like to share with you a couple of things that are being discussed. On this specific issue, making a distinction between the programmer autonomous vehicle versus the driver himself. So for example, there's a kollel under Rav Asher Weiss, which is called the Machon HaTorani LeHeker Atid, which is basically the Torah Institute for the research of future issues. And they came up with a very novel way of looking at this problem. They said like this, okay, if a driver is driving down the street and the classic trolley problem. I'm driving down the street. My lane has five people, and there's a guy, and there's a lane next to me with one person. I'm going to have to choose one of them to drive over. So we said that I have to shiv al taaseh. I cannot kum aseh. I cannot kill somebody by a dime. Switching my lane would be killing them by my own very straight will. And so I just have to try to apply my brakes as much as possible, but basically I can't go out and kill somebody else. I mean, that's explicit in the Sitz Eliezer and others as well. Now, what about the car being programmed? Does the car being programmed have any leeway? So these guys from Usher Weiss's Kolel So they said, look, the programmer is in a completely different situation because when he is sitting making the decisions that he's programming, he's actually working under the modus operandi of saving the world. He's trying to save as many people as possible. He's trying to raise the statistics of every individual on the planet Earth being saved. And so now his decision making at that point is to try to save as many people as possible. And so he is not beholden to that explicit case where there are five people in front of him or one person in front of him and he has to either shevaches or kumtase. He is basically at this, like we said at the beginning, at a kumtase position. And so it's a choice of either killing five or killing one. Or really the way they look at it is saving as many people as possible. And since there isn't really anybody in any lane, the programmer is taking into account everybody in the world and raising the statistics that they will live. So that's their approach. And
actually,
they say that, yeah, go ahead.
Rabbi Navon, I don't understand that answer.
Okay.
On the top of the Chazanish, that you're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to deflect the missile.
Correct.
It would be one missile, 100 missiles, or 1,000 missiles. But the Chazanish changed his mind on the opinion of the Chazanish. So this guy is writing right now in the code. He's saying in the case where there's five people in the car and there's one person going to get killed because of the other side of the Chazanish, it's a suffix of Ritzicha, and therefore we're going to say you can't do it. Well, if it's five cars, 1,000 cars, 1,000,000 cars, I don't think the Chazanish would change his mind. The same halacha, it's just done repetitively. I don't understand the thought.
Okay, so I think that your question is in place, but nevertheless, what they would answer you is what they've answered me is that the Chazon Ish uses this term pulat hatzalah versus pula achzarit, and this pula achzarit is where you're looking at somebody and you see here there's this guy and I'm going to run him over. That's brutal. Okay, but when you're sitting writing code, there is no brutality. You're not actually running over anybody. You are actually trying to save as many people as possible. And so they look at this that situation as a of writing the code as a pulat hatzalah.
Even though they're specifically writing it for the case of the Chazanish where you're deflecting the missile and you're still not allowed. Other side of the Chazanish is even a pulat hatzalah is not allowed. We're killing somebody. That's what the quandary that has in it. So his other thought is, though, even though it's a pool of authority, you're still not allowed to do it. It seems
correct.
To be directly opposite of a Weiss's conclusion.
Yes, it's true. Everything you're saying is true. But for now, like I said, I mean, these people are still working on this idea. So I would, they call the paper that they put out, they call it a draft. It's a tuta. So they're working on this idea, and I would say that it needs more work, but I'm throwing it out there as something that's being thought about, you know, in a very serious way by very serious thinkers here in Jerusalem. I wanted to give you another idea, and that's also something that we sort of mentioned in passing at the beginning, and it's by a friend of mine who's also working on the code, a different part of the code at Mobileye, and he also has smicha, and he's thought about this problem, and he wants to say that, well, he agrees with the Chazon Ish, he agrees with the Tzitzit Eliezer, but programming the car is something different, and the reason that he says it is what I've mentioned before, is that when you are writing the code, you are going to kill somebody. You're going to kill five or you're going to kill one. He says when you're writing code, there is no shev al taseh. There's no shev al taseh. There's only kumaseh. So if there's a kumaseh, everybody would agree that it's better to kill one than to kill five. And so he wants to say, there's a friend of mine named Rav Chaim Shachor, and he also, I don't think that, you know, he's also, these are all ideas that are just in thought, they need to be worked out, they need to be found support for, but, you know, this is sort of like a cutting-edge discussion, and so we're just throwing out ideas here. So no one should be held responsible for saying something. But in any case, it is an interesting way to look at the problem, that all programming is kum asay. It's all, I'm going to either kill this group or I'm going to kill that group. There is no shev al taseh opportunity which did appear in the discussions of the Chazon Ish or the Tzitzit Eliezer.
Let me suggest something to you, Rabbi Navon. Tell me if you whether this is it's something you said before. You said you're writing under the auspices of the government. The government is going to tell you what to do. Right?
Correct.
So let me see, throw an idea at you. There's a Gemara in Shavuot. The Gemara says that a king is allowed to enter into a Mohemes Rishus, a Vaitaisator of the Gemara, even though many people will die, up to a fifth or a sixth of the population.
Yes, yes.
The Gemara is, that's Lamedhe, I think, right?
Correct.
Something like that.
And
why is that? Because a king has a right, I think the Bahrainim say, the Maxius and others say on the spot, because in the Dina, the Malchus Dina, Shmuel Lashitase, Shmuel is the one that says a king is allowed to, cause the death of many of his people for the Parnassa. Well, it's like the Gemara in Brachas says, they asked David, what should we do? We have no money to go to war. He said, a king is allowed to, for the well-being of a nation, sacrifice people's lives. So if you're going to be, and nobody argues on that Gemara, that Mereschia says over there that it's Dina the Malchus Adina, and nobody argues that in America there's Dina the Malchus Adina, or Moshe writes about it, many places. I mean, you have real outliers who say there's no Dina the Malchus Adina. Certainly in Kutzlar, there's Dina the Malchus Adina. How does Shmuel say, because of Dina the Malchus Adina, the king is allowed to kill a sixth of the people? He's basically he's causing people to die, and it's permitted with Torah of Parnassa, because that is the part of a kingdom's work. That is part of, the business of America is business. The business of any king is to feed their people. And
no,
that's
absolutely.
Why he's allowed to...
you can use Rashi. Well, Rashi says to go that he's putting them to work, so fine. But he's not making... He's not asking anybody to do anything illegal. He's not asking them to go against halacha.
They're being Irish, Martin, and Mr. Shay Sechem. Of course they are. There's an issue to put yourself at risk. The person's not allowed to. You have a din of a ma'abid out smoladas without this. So, din of the Malchus Adina said it's not ma'abid out smoladas because it's part of the workings of the kingdom. So, if he's allowed to put people at risk and not make the ma'abid out smoladas, I would certainly take the position that where he's looking out for their welfare and not ma'abid out smoladas. So, I'm not sure I agree with Rabbi Weiss on this either.
There's a group of rabbis that are thinking about it. It's not Rabbi Weiss himself that is arguing these points. Ultimately, I think the only rock-solid conclusion that you can come out of this, besides that Tzarich Iyun Gadol, is that somebody can self-sacrifice, right? Whether it's the case of a one person, like two people, Ma'alchim, but the Bamidbar, right, the Kiton Achad Ben-Em, the person could give up his life if he wanted to. The same thing in the city. A person could volunteer and say, I'm going to save the city. The Gemara brings the example of Lulianus and Papus, and so there is a possibility for self-sacrifice. And so I would offer that there could be an altruistic switch in your car that says, I'm willing to self-sacrifice. Right, that I think everybody would agree to halachically is cogent. But otherwise, this whole story of one against one, or passive or active, or one against many, passive or active programs or driven, all of these things are shanui b'machloket gedola. And like I said, there are serious thinkers that are working on it.
So let me ask you one closing question.
Sure.
Okay. Given that the halacha on this is still, like you say, it's being worked on, right?
Yeah.
And a programmer would be asked, listen, halachically, the Chazon Ish says one to save many, he's not certain. We have other sparas, maybe Dina the Mahus Adina, we're not sure, they haven't worked out. Now, do you tell them, does that programmer say, listen, I'm just doing my job and I'm going to write it, or does he say, wait? Could be because of my writing this, there's 3,000 deaths a day. Maybe one of them is because a truck hits the car. Maybe every night I go to sleep and I'm a murderer, according to the other side of the Chazon Ish.
Mm-hmm.
What does that poor innocent programmer do?
Right. So I would say like this. First of all, I gave you the 3,300 number. That's people killing people every day. I have no question in my mind that programmed cars will come nowhere near that. They will maybe kill one or two a year at most, and that may even be an exaggeration. I think that the programmer is, by and large, doing a great service to humanity. So now, okay, you still want to say fine, but, he may end up killing somebody. From our whole discussion, I hope it's been clear that there is enough to go on that places the programmer in a much more cushioned position vis-a-vis halakha than somebody that's driving on the street. And so I think that, you know, at this stage when there is no, clear halakha, and there are a lot of sides to it, and the Chazon Ish himself is sort of like mitlabet, you know, which way is it really? And there are poskim today that have poskim like the Chazon Ish to say, yes, you can sacrifice the few to save the many. I mean, there's Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein wrote in Asiya, and Rav Shlomo Dichovsky. There are people who have sided with the Chazon Ish's reasoning of Pu'ulat Hatzalah.
Wow, that's fantastic. This is really a treat. Everybody, Moshe Navon, he's the head of ASIC Design. He's ASIC Design Manager for Mobileye, the largest software/hardware power. I'm totally untechnical. Designer of the software of autonomous vehicles in the world. Thank you very much, Rabbi.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.